Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're setting our sights on someone truly iconic, one of modern music's most, well, enigmatic figures, Bob Dylan.
And we're doing it through a really fascinating lens, his own memoir, Chronicles, Volume 1.
Yeah, and it's definitely not your standard autobiography, is it? No cradle to grave story here.
Not at all. It's much more impressionistic, like flashes, glimpses into these pivotal moments.
Almost like cinematic scenes, really, jumping through time. We've looked at a bunch of literary analyses, too, so we're getting this layered perspective.
Right.
And our mission today is to try and, you know, peel back some of those layers of myth surrounding Dylan to get a sense of the artist forming, his struggle with fame, what creativity means to him, using his own words as our guide.
And Chronicles itself feels like a tool for that, doesn't it? Like he's intentionally deconstructing the myth.
Deconstructing.
Yeah. Taking apart this huge public image piece by piece and showing us the reality of the artist underneath. The core idea really seems to be that an artist's identity isn't just there. Mm. It's something you build, you craft it. It changes. It takes work, study, influence, and just sheer will, especially against all that public pressure.
That's a really powerful way to frame it. So the book, Chronicles, Volume 1, Simon & Schuster, 2004, defies the usual structure, like you said.
Just like the man himself.
Exactly. Robert Allen Zimmerman, born way back in 41, Duluth, Minnesota, singer-songwriter, poet, Nobel winner. And yeah, the sources nail it. A perpetual shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm. And in the book, he's both telling the story and is the story. He's actively pulling back the curtain on the myth.
So that non-linear thing isn't just style.
No, I think the analyses argue it's deeper. It's a literary device. It kind of mimics how memory actually works, you know, not a straight line.
Yeah, it's messy. You connect dots backwards. Right. And by doing that, he challenges our fixed ideas about him. He forces us to see him as this craftsman, this seeker, not just the icon, not the voice of a generation thing he always pushed back against.
It really makes you think about your own life, doesn't it? That tension between how others see you and who you feel you are inside, how you shape your own narrative.
Definitely. We all do it to some extent.
Okay, so even though the book jumps around, Dylan does shine a light on these really crucial periods. Let's try and trace that journey a bit, starting with those formative years.
Back in Hibbing, Minnesota, he talks about this feeling of peculiar isolation.
Right. Middle-class Jewish family, small town, feeling different.
But then music hits him. That late night radio, Hank Williams, Muddy Waters, Little Richard.
Yeah.
He describes it like a spiritual awakening.
Like signals from another world.
Exactly. From another universe, he says. Raw emotion, truth. Stuff that wasn't exactly valued in Hibbing, maybe.
And then comes Woody Guthrie. That was huge for him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Finding Guthrie's book, Bound for Glory, he called it a sacred text.
Wow. So it wasn't just the music.
No, the whole package. The artist as a witness, carrying history, social conscience. It gave him a model, a path.
Then a short stint at the University of Minnesota. Not so much about classes, but...
But diving into the Minneapolis folk scene, performing in coffee houses, that's where Robert Zimmerman starts becoming Bob Dylan.
And choosing that name, that was a statement in itself.
A fundamental break, yeah. A declaration. I'm creating myself through this music.
Which leads him to New York. That pilgrimage to see Woody Guthrie, who was sick by then, it feels so symbolic.
It really does. Seeking a blessing, almost, from this chosen artistic father.
And he lands in Greenwich Village in 61, just as the folk scene is exploding.
Perfect timing. It was this soundtrack of social change, right?
Hardly.
Those coffee houses, Goethe's folk city.
Yeah.
They were like laboratories for him.
A laboratory, yeah. And then, bam. John Hammond, the legendary producer, discovers him, record contract.
Things moved fast then.
Incredibly. By 63, the freewheeling Bob Dylan comes out, and suddenly he's the voice of his generation.
The label he hated.
Right. Chronicles makes it clear he was uncomfortable with that right away. Songs like Blowing in the Wind. They made him an icon, sure, but also saddled him with this massive weight of expectation.
And that tension is so central to the book and to his whole career, really. Even at that peak, he's feeling trapped.
The prison of public expectation, he calls it.
Yeah, and he's actively fighting against being the spokesman. Already tried to escape it in the late 60s, early 70s.
So those controversial moves, later changing his voice, writing simpler songs.
He basically says in the book they were deliberate, acts of self-sabotage almost, trying to find a normal life, protect his creative space.
That constant push and pull, it eventually led him to a really dark place artistically, didn't it, in the late 80s?
Yeah, the creative crisis. He calls it the lost land, feeling totally adrift, disillusioned, even alienated from the whole Bob Dylan brand he'd created.
Sounds like he seriously considered just quitting.
He did, but then out of that low point comes this rebirth.
Oh, mercy. The New Orleans album.
Right. A chance meeting, working with Daniel Lanois. He describes New Orleans itself almost like a mystical force in the process.
And Chronicles is really raw about that period. Vulnerability, the hard work of finding the spark again.
It really is. And then there's that final chapter, River of Ice. It goes deep into his self-education. His lifelong apprenticeship, he calls it.
This is the mind-blowing part for me. The sheer work involved. Hours in the library.
Yeah, reading microfilmed newspapers from the Civil War era, studying Brecht, Ovid, obscure poets, breaking down folk and blues structures like a scholar.
So he wasn't just, like, channeling inspiration from the cosmos.
Uh-huh. No, he presents himself as a craftsman, a student of tradition, systematically studying how to do what he did, absorbing, analyzing, rebuilding.
That really flips the script on the whole spontaneous genius idea.
Completely. It suggests genius, or at least his kind of genius, is built. It's relentless curiosity, discipline, hard graft, not just waiting for lightning to strike.
But surely there's innate talent there, too. Chronicles doesn't deny that, does it?
No, not denies it, yeah. But maybe recontextualizes it. The talent is the starting point, the potential. But the book emphasizes the work that shaped it, honed it, made it meaningful and lasting. He seems more interested in showing the construction than just the gift.
Okay, so pulling back again, what are the core values, the philosophy underpinning all this, according to Chronicles?
Well, it makes you wonder, you know, in a world obsessed with branding and consistency, just how radical his approach is, this constant reinvention.
Yeah.
A few key pillars stand out. First, definitely the power of that American folk tradition. He sees himself almost as a caretaker.
Keeping those old songs, those old truths alive.
Exactly. Finding new ways to make them resonate. Second, this absolute conviction that real art demands change, reinvention.
Even if it means throwing away what works commercially.
Right, even if it alienates people. That explains those big shifts, folk to electric, protest to personal. It wasn't about trends. It was about following his own artistic compass.
And a third pillar?
I'd say his view of American culture is this big, messy, democratic tapestry. He digs into working class voices, immigrant stories, marginalized sounds, blues, gospel, country.
Weaving it all together.
Yeah, showing the connections. So his motivation seems to be authenticity first, way above commercial success, being a cultural translator maybe second. And underlying it all, a kind of spiritual seeking through the music itself. It wasn't just entertainment for him.
No, clearly not. And his way of handling adversity, it wasn't direct confrontation usually, was it?
Not really.
Yeah.
He responded with transformation, like Newport 65, going electric. That backlash didn't make him retreat. It hardened his resolve about creative freedom.
He turned criticism into fuel.
Often, yeah. The toughest critique sometimes coincided with his most groundbreaking work. And he learned to keep that separation. The public, Dylan, the private person, protecting the core.
That's a skill in itself. It makes you think, how do you, listening now, protect your own values when the pressure's on? It's a real struggle for integrity. So Dylan's life, as Chronicle shows it, is marked by these huge turning points, moments that just shifted everything.
And often, like we said, met with resistance or confusion at the time. But looking back, they were crucial for his independence and growth.
Mm.
The first big one has to be discovering Woody Guthrie around 1960.
Bound for Glory.
Yeah, reading that gave him the whole template. Music, conscience, storytelling, rolled into one. And that led straight to the New York pilgrimage, visiting Guthrie. That's really the symbolic birth of Bob Dylan.
Then number two, unavoidable, going electric in 65.
Newport Folk Festival.
Yeah.
Chaos, booing, one of music's most debated moments.
But for him, it was about authenticity demanding evolution, not playing to expectations. That backlash taught him a hard lesson about independence.
Definitely. Then a year later, 66, the motorcycle accident.
Which he calls a convenient excuse.
Right. A way to step out of the blinding spotlight when fame got overwhelming. That retreat allowed him time with family, and crucially, time to explore traditional music deeply, privately, which led to
the basement tapes.
Legendary stuff born from needing normalcy.
Exactly.
Then, maybe more surprising for some, the Christian conversion in 1979.
Yeah, that was a sharp turn. Albums like Slow Train coming.
Deeply reflected his new faith. Alienated a lot of fans, confused critics, but again, he showed he'd risk his career for what he felt was personal truth. marked him as a serious spiritual seeker.
And finally, maybe less dramatic, but just as significant, starting the Neverending Tour in 1988.
Yeah, that recommitment to live performance as his main artistic channel. His belief that songs live and breathe through being played, reinterpreted night after night.
It became his ongoing laboratory.
Mm-hmm. Exploring that huge American songbook, keeping it alive, twisting it into new shapes. Preservationist and innovator, constantly on the road.
It's amazing how those moments built the artist. Makes you pause and think, what were the three pivotal moments in your own life? How did you navigate those crossroads? Okay, so wrapping this up, what are the big human lessons we can pull from this deep dive into Dylan and Chronicles? What resonates universally?
Well, connecting it all, I think his journey powerfully suggests that finding and living an authentic life, creatively or personally, it's an ongoing process. It's messy.
Not his destination.
No, definitely not. It's about resilience, curiosity, and being willing to reinvent yourself. One huge lesson is that authenticity requires evolution. You have to be willing to change, even if it means disappointing people or leaving success behind.
And balancing tradition with innovation, that's key too.
Absolutely. Respecting where you came from, the history, but finding your own unique voice within it. Preserving the core while creating something new. And the need for boundaries protecting your private self in a public world. Dylan was a master strategist at that.
He had to be.
Which leads to protecting your artistic vision. Resisting all those pressures commercial, critical, that try to dilute it. That takes courage. And maybe underpinning it all is that learning never stops. His relentless curiosity, his intellectual hunger that fueled everything.
And it brings us back to dismantling that myth of effortless genius.
Right. His art, Chronicles insists, comes from conscious effort, rigorous study, discipline. It's a powerful argument for the value of sheer hard work in any creative endeavor.
It really challenges you, doesn't it? How do these ideas hit home for you? What pressures do you face staying true to yourself, and how do you shield that inner core? All right, to bring our deep dive to a close, we've distilled three final takeaways from Bob Dylan's Chronicles, Volume 1. First, an emotional insight, the weight of artistic inheritance. You really feel Dylan's deep, almost reverent respect for the American folk tradition. There's this palpable sense of responsibility he carries to learn from the past masters, to keep their songs breathing. It shows how much our individual work rests on foundations built by others. It's quite moving, that sense of obligation. Second, an intellectual insight, the philosophy of authentic creativity. Dylan's whole stance on authenticity, that real creativity demands constant change, even if it means walking away from success or confusing your audience, it provides this incredibly potent, maybe even difficult, framework for artistic integrity. That constant battle between commerce and vision, he gives us a masterclass in navigating it. Sometimes the most creative thing is just saying no.
And finally, a universal insight, the necessity of protective boundaries. Throughout the book, you see Dylan figuring out how to be Bob Dylan in public while protecting Robert Zimmerman in private. His strategies for shielding his creative core, even while being this huge public figure, offer really practical wisdom for anyone trying to maintain their authentic self under external pressure. Especially today, right, in this always-on world, learning to draw those lines is crucial. Ultimately, Dylan's journey in Chronicles kind of suggests that maybe the best way to understand an artist isn't through a simple timeline. It's through seeing the choices they make, often contradictory, always deliberate, to keep their own unique flame burning. It pushes us past the easy myth to see the hard craft, the struggle, the constant reinvention behind a truly authentic, enduring life.
So what's sticking with you after this dive into Bob Dylan's Chronicles? How do you think about your own story, your own creative path? What traditions are you part of, and how are you making them new? Keep diving deep, keep asking questions, and we'll catch you next time. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.